My name is Ashley Kahn. I'm a music historian, author, writer, journalist, and I work in various mediums, including written form, electronic, radio broadcast, etc.
So let me start by asking you, you had said that you kind of had a personal story of a connection with Sergeant Pepper. You want to start by telling me that?
Well, my connection to Sergeant Pepper really goes back to those sort of dimly lit memories that anyone has of being 6, 7 years old, which was how old I was when the album appeared. And I remember being babysat by a neighbor's daughter. I think the last name was Foglietta, good Italian stock up there in Westchester County, here in New York, where we were living. And she would bring the album along and play it every time she babysat. So, you know, I would be sitting there with the album cover, just poring over these images. And I remember it was lyrics that were printed on a red background, in one of the leaves of the album. And it was even for a 7 year old, it was an incredible thing to encounter. The sounds, of course, were incredible. I mean, I'd had no way of judging, oh, this is a pop song with a sitar, an Indian instrument being played in it. It just sounded normal to me. You know, this is the way music's supposed to sound. But the one thing that I remember really stuck to me was the incredible sadness in some of the tunes that, these 20-somethings, the Beatles, were able to affect. And that sort of depth of emotion, that maturity that normally you only associate with someone who has, reached their 40s or 50s, Billie Holiday or Frank Sinatra. But especially on a tune like She's Leaving Home, I remember I could feel what they were getting at. And I didn't have to know what the words meant. I could feel where they were going. And it was during a really rough time in the family. My parents were splitting up. And eventually me and my brother would end up with my father, and my mother would end up in the hospital. And the incredible sadness that I associate with that time period is kind of connected to that song, too. And so it's like one of those indelible links that I think I will always have. But when I go back to that album and I hear she's going home, she's leaving home, that's what comes to mind for me, and it'll forever be linked that way.
Well, beyond the personal story, then, what do you think they were getting at in that song?
I think they were getting at a lot of things. I mean, there was definitely a generational gap going on, in that time period. It was about the stuff you never talk about, never mind, in song form, but the stuff you wouldn't even talk about at the local grocery or when you ran into the neighbors. This is your family's dirty laundry and you keep it at home. And here they were making a song, a pop song, out of it. The idea that, there's such a disaffection and split between generations, especially during the 60s, a very polarizing time between the old ways and the new ways of looking at things, that there was no room for love. There was no room for allowing, a woman who was just reaching adulthood to follow her heart. I mean, that's what that song really was about for me.
It also represents, I think, a moment in McCartney's songwriting when, and he's sort of moving towards this in Paperback Writer and Penny Lane and such, but...
Well, what they were geniuses at, and, I think that any great songwriter is going to have that ability to find just the right image or just the economic phrasing that gives you the full picture. I mean, when you think of it, a lyric really is only, 16 lines, 24 lines, at the most. And within that, very, very tight frame, you have to suggest a whole lifetime. And, you know, placing it in a very specific time, you know, as that song does. God, I wish I had the lyric in front of me.
But Wednesday
it's like,
morning at 5 o'clock.
Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock, you know. I mean, it opens like a film does. It opens like a movie does, with a at a very specific time and place. And, you know, there's another song that shares this, I think, is By the Time I Get to Phoenix, which is the story of a man leaving, you know, his woman, and how he traces the day, and you know, hour by hour, and the realization dawns upon the people who are left behind that a departure has taken place. And you know, that sort of unfolding is also very cinematic.
So your first exposure, 6 or 7 years old, how does this album hold up 40 years later?
I think, you know, that looking back at Sgt. Pepper's now, you know, with it's impossible not to add in the years of experience since, which includes a lot of, you know, thinking about music, a lot of absorbing, you know, musical progress since that time. There's some of it that sounds quaint. There's some of it that sounds like, well, they you know, took an experiment here and took it as far as they could. I mean, it's very clear, you know, now that Sgt. Pepper's was very much Paul McCartney's, you know, album, that he wanted to do something that was very English, that was very much based upon the English vaudeville tradition, which is really what's you know, which is the primary influence on the musical style of that time and of that album. You know, does it hold up? Absolutely. I mean, it holds up both as an icon of that time period. I mean, it certainly is as a sort of totemic, you know, stature in the timeline of the 60s and its influences without question. But musically, it really does too. It has incredible moments, and there's a much wider range of emotion and musical styles on that album that I think it's given credit for. Most people just hear, you know, just connect with, you know, the theme song and the English vaudeville, you know, strain that is running through it. But there's so much else there besides.
Well, would you be willing to pick out a couple of incredible moments that you think stand out or really resonate with you still when you hear it these days?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that a lot of it has to do with this sort of weird psychedelia that sort of filtering its way through the music. Because it's not just, you know, like the Pink Floyd psychedelia that would come in within a year or two. And it certainly isn't the sort of trippy effects that a lot of garage bands, you know, one-hit wonders that were throwing into their music here in the States. It's really effectively used, the special effects. And I'm talking about stuff like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, you know, the I forget what type of organ he's using there. It might be a Fender Rhodes, but the way that, you know, the keyboard sound is in Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Like on Good Morning, Good Morning, I mean, there's a collage of sounds on there that obviously prefigures what, you know, John Lennon would be doing on the White Album, you know, the sort of like music concrete, you know, mixing of sounds and voices, et cetera, you know, into the music. That's a favorite moment of mine. There's, you know, everyone's, I'm sure, you know, has one of their favorite moments is the climactic chord on, A Day in the Life, which just seems to imply this, you know, infinity, going on forever, and is really probably one of the most incredible album ending moments of all time in any genre.
Right. And, you know, there's, you mentioned it as being McCartney's album. Harrison and Lennon, you know, when they talk about it, they don't really talk very lovingly about it, maybe because their contribution was less, but are there, I know Lennon's chiefly associated with Day in the Life and Good Morning. What about Harrison's playing or contribution here?
Well, I think that George Harrison obviously comes through with the burgeoning Eastern-influenced philosophy that was going to become a big part of his path, you know, to use a spiritual term, because that's really what it was. He was studying, you know, sitar with, of all people, Ravi Shankar. And, of course, he plays sitar on the tune Within You, Without You. The focus of that song, the idea of an inner life and how important that is. In a way, it speaks to a song like She's Leaving Home, you know, that the interior life is just as important as the exterior life. And that was definitely reflective of the spiritual concerns of the day in the 60s. I hate to use the term spiritual because it's so overused and it means so many different things. But back then, the idea of looking elsewhere for a path, whether it was Eastern religions or looking deep within oneself to really, answer the big questions, you know, pop music had not been used for that purpose before. So in a way, I think that George's influence and George's own concerns can't help but be expressed in the music somehow, some way here, too.
So I know you've lived through several different anniversaries of this album, the 20th and 30th. I mean, is there anything different to think about this album, you know, 40 years down the road than maybe we have in these other anniversary moments?
I just think that now more than ever, the same questions and the same issues that were being faced in 1967, 40 years later, they're just as important. And the diligence and the patience that are required to continue to delve into oneself, to question authority, to question, why we do the things we do. One can't help parallel Vietnam and Iraq. And once again, we want to bring our boys home, you know, boys and the men and women in uniform, you know. It's probably more relevant than ever, you know, that these type of questions be asked and that the dialogue continue. And that, our music, that's, you know, our cultural life reflect, you know, that type of, those type of concerns and issues.
Where does that stand out on Sgt. Pepper, or like things like questioning authority or maybe some sort of, you know, tie to global strife or whatever? Where do you pick that up?
Well, I think that the nature of the Beatles and the way that they question authority and the way that they asked their audience to look at themselves consider deeper questions was always done subtly. I mean, it's like Bob Dylan songs. You know, you almost have to. In examining their lyrics and examining their songs, one gets the feeling that that's really what they're about. But, you know, I mean, one of the most obvious is Within Without You, you know, and the spiritual, you know, focus of those words. I mean, independent free thinking is really what the Beatles are about. They're not telling you what to think, but they're telling you, please do think and do it on your own. You know, don't follow leaders, you know, and watch your parking meters, to quote Bob Dylan. But, you know, a song like Fixing a Hole, you know, it really doesn't matter if I'm wrong, I'm right. Where I belong, I'm right. and see the people standing there who disagree and never win and wonder why they don't get in my door, you know. I mean, these are lyrics that had to speak to young minds, saying, you know, think for yourself. Don't believe everything that you read. And, you know, I mean, when I think about 1967 and what I recall of the national media, only then were they beginning to question, you know, the numbers that were given by the Army in Vietnam. And that, you know, as more and more, you know, journalists went over there, they discovered how much of a chaotic no-win situation it was. And, you know, given the way that most of the media covered the invasion of Iraq this time around, I mean, the parallels are just, you know, unbelievable, that all the lessons that people learned back then, that yes, your government, unchecked, will take matters into their own hands and do what they want. And do it on political grounds, not for, you know, humanistic purposes or even what's best for the country. You know, they will do what they want to do unless the various people stand up for themselves. I'm going off on a political tangent here, but, you know, I'll get off my soapbox. But you can't help but feel how incredibly, you know, visionary and insightful these lyrics are. You know, 40 years later, when we need them more than ever.
And I guess some would also just point out to, you know, the overall presentation. I mean, at this point, starting with Revolver and Pepper, you know, the Beatles really are just doing kind of 180 degrees from what their record company would maybe expect or what their fans would expect. You know, they certainly are not at all about repeating themselves, and that in itself sends a message in a way, doesn't it?
Well, I think that, you know, Capitol Records back then, their label, or EMI, the parent company in England, couldn't have been happier with anything that the Beatles were doing. It was selling, and it was selling in large, unprecedented numbers. So if they were willing to take a slightly political stand or, you know, have a social missive in their lyrics, they're like, sure, go ahead. I don't think they were that concerned at all. You know, most record executives of that day and age didn't pay that much attention anyway to the lyrics. They were concerned with sales charts. As far as the audience, I think that, you know, the 60s, especially, I mean, what we associate with the 60s is really about 1966, 67 on, you know, free thinking, a lot of, the burgeoning of a youth power movement, et cetera, and the rock explosion of the late 60s is really what we call the 60s now. You know, all of that was a perfect backdrop for an album such as this. So it couldn't have come along at a better time, but it certainly benefited from the time it was born into.
Did you say you're holding the album or the CD?
I've got the CD lyrics in front of me.
The last thing I would, before I want to switch gears, is, and I, you know, I know so much has been said about this cover art, but I'm looking at the original album right now from my collection, and you know, I'm about your age, but I've seen, you know, hundreds, thousands of albums and cover art come and go. And I just don't know, you know, that anything is quite as, you know, provocative, explosive, intriguing as what I'm holding in my hands. And I don't know, when you were describing being sort of, as a 6 or 7 year old, just sort of enraptured with it. I'm just wondering if you might have some other comments about this presentation.
Sergeant Pepper is like the ultimate example of the LP experience, of holding a 12 by 12 piece of cardboard that in some cases was gatefold, so it would open up and you'd have, if it was a jazz album, there'd be an essay, there'd be a liner note about the music inside. If it was an opera, you know, you'd have the libretto. In this case, you had the lyrics to the Beatles songs and you had Sir Peter Blake's wonderful evocative images, including that sort of weird stand-up collection of personages on the cover, you know, and what are they standing around? Are they at a gravesite? Are they, you know, just posing for this ceremonial photograph, you know, this moment in time that needs to be preserved, like the meeting of the railroads, you know, in the middle of America or whatever? That, you know, sort of evocative, mysterious quality, just adds to the whole sort of, the pedestal upon which this album is placed today and was placed back then. You know, the playfulness, sort of faux military, uniforms that the Beatles are wearing, with their, you know, the 60s facial hair sort of made to mock a different era when that facial hair was very familiar as well. Handlebar mustaches, etc. turn of the last century, I should say. You know, there's a playfulness about it too. The idea of the cutouts, you know, you could cut out a mustache of your own and put it on yourself, you know. But even at the age of 7, I knew that you weren't supposed to cut it out, that this is such a special, you know, bit of design that it's more to appreciate than to actually, you know, interact with. But the idea of, you know, suggesting an interactive quality. There really is that sense that, you know, the packaging should reflect the depth and playfulness and range of emotions that's in the music. And this album certainly is one of the prime examples. It really is. I mean, if you think about the music too, I mean, there's some very serious, you know, darker, you know, moments in the music, like She's Leaving Home. But then, Lovely Rita? I mean, please. That's some people would call that throwaway tune. But it's so artfully done. And it's so much fun. It's just this little romp, you know, of, you know, sitting on a sofa with a sister or two. Well, how close are you going to get to the woman that way? You know, I mean, it's making fun of itself and saying, okay, I'm going to give you a little love song, but this is as close as I get, you know.